Hello, everyone, and welcome to our season finale coverage of American Ninja Warrior. I am your host, Taryn Armstrong, and I am here with the amazing leader that definitely didn't force me to do anything on the Any Ra Happy Hour. I definitely take that back.
I don't even know how to respond to that. Already alienating the non-Ra Happy Hour listeners. Well, Taryn said something really rude about me on his other podcast last night.
I was very kind about her, and then I was prompted to make a joke, and I made the joke.
And it was incredibly rude. And so Taryn and I are in a fight for the duration of this podcast, so it seems a little contentious, that's why.
I'm also just like in the depths of sorrow right now because I just finished the episode right before we're recording this. So I still have Drew Dreschel's face just like in my head right now.
Yeah, a little downer of a podcast altogether.
Well, what have you been up to this week before we get into the episode?
What have I been up to? I don't know. It's been a busy week. Back at school, I have been hanging out a lot with the great Allie Lasher, who is a member of the Rehap Up family. She now goes to my school. We had a really fun time, went to a drag show on Friday. Digesting all of this ending, you know? This is our last podcast. Been dreading it all week. How about you? What have you been up to?
Well, I've spent all week. I've been reaching out. I've been trying to find some guests to have on this podcast. It looks like we may have someone that we might be recording with soon, and that will be very fun if this pulls through. So looking forward to that, and hopefully you will be as well. But yeah, other than that, just normal routine, I guess, up until this episode that has just like totally thrown me for a loop. Anyway, let's get into this episode. This is the season finale, the one we look forward to all season long. And we start off with this package that is all about the athletes sort of as kids and what they're doing now. And it's sort of like contrasting like, oh, look, they've been athletes all their lives, stuff like that. I thought it was a pretty cool idea for a package, right?
Yeah, I watched this very tired, so this might be why, but I was crying, like actual tears, not just like tearing up at this package. And I don't know why, just something about seeing all their journeys and this being the end of the road for so many people. Well, for everyone, apparently. It was really well put together, I thought. It put me in a good headspace that was soon to be completely destroyed.
Yes. And destroyed immediately pretty much by this stage two walkthrough, I imagine. We start off stage two with the giant ring swing, which is essentially the ring swing from the qualifiers, except extended. And I thought I'm okay with this obstacle. I like the ring swing a lot, and the fact that it's bigger doesn't really make that much of a difference. I like it better than the rope jungle, which I just thought was a terrible obstacle. So I think so far improvement.
What was your problem with rope jungle?
It was just so messy, and so it was never fun to watch for me. Just like, oh, look, they're going across a bunch of ropes and oh, no, they got hung up and now they're done. It's over already.
Yeah. No, the ring swing is a good one. It's a good obstacle that sort of indicates how a run is going to go, because if you do it well, then it's really fast and not that draining. But if you get hung up, it zaps a ton of time and energy. So it's a good indicator obstacle.
Yeah, that is my one problem with it, actually, is that it's very easy to tell from the very first obstacle, like, oh, they're failing. That's it.
But it makes it more exciting when they get through it and make it up on obstacles after that, if that ever really happened. But I don't know. There are only 17 people. We have a really small sample size here to make generalizations about any obstacle.
Look at you being scientific.
Yeah.
Next up was the down up salmon ladder, which is a strange name, I guess.
Yeah, this was weird because it's physically less demanding to go down than it is to go up, but it's a lot more difficult to not fall because you have to contend with gravity trying to push you down. So yeah, I thought this was really bizarre.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is this has been in use in Sasuke for a little while, except I believe you go up and then across and then down instead of down first, which I think going down first is a little bit mentally frustrating, right? Because you know you have to go up, but right now you're going down, so you know that you're going in the opposite direction of where you eventually want to be, which is probably pretty frustrating. But other than that, yeah, it didn't really cause anybody that much difficulty other than the fact that it requires a lot of concentration, really.
Yeah.
Then we go into the Wave Runner, and this was pretty much the most deadly obstacle on the course as far as how many people failed here. And not super surprising as to why. It's very, very finicky, and just the small amount of being a small amount off balance would send you into the water. You had to hold on to the board, which was curved like a wave, and then transition to the next one, which was a triangle shaped board, and then do your dismount. And as some people unfortunately learned, you must touch the second board before you dismount. Otherwise, you will be disqualified. This is just like, in general, I feel like they made this too hard. I feel like the floating boards are hard enough, and they didn't need a revamp. They usually take out a lot of people anyway. And just like how finicky this was, it was too much for me.
Yeah, I was at first excited about this obstacle, actually, because it's something that is about balance from your core that I thought wouldn't have the same thing as something like, the paddle boards, where you could have great balance and just kind of misstep and fall off. That's a frustrating thing about balance obstacles. But because this is balancing with your core, but it's also upper body strength, I thought that it would be more fair and more predictable, but it was just as finicky as all those other obstacles. And my other issue with it was that they kept calling that second the triangular board a pyramid board, but it's flat. It's a triangle. The definition of a pyramid is that's three-dimensional.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
It was so dumb. I don't know why they make that transition to the pyramid board. Okay.
It would be pretty interesting if they had to grab onto a literal pyramid, right? Yeah.
Yes. That would be at least appropriately named.
Yeah. Anyway, after the Wave Runner, we get into the butterfly wall, which at first I was like, oh, really? We're doing the butterfly wall again? This is just so discriminatory toward the short people. But they said they have added a trampoline to the butterfly wall, which makes me much happier. I feel like, all right, that seems more fair. I'm okay with this. So butterfly wall, same as always. You grab onto the wall, it spins around. If you can get across before the whole rotation, that's usually better. But most people aren't able to do that.
Yeah, I have no issue with the butterfly wall.
But then we have the double wedge. The wedge, the obstacle that only two people in qualifiers were able to complete. They have doubled it. And yeah, that seems like a great idea, right?
Yeah. I can't believe Akbar did not ever call this a double wedge sword. I was waiting for that literally the entire episode and he didn't do it. Or maybe he did and I missed it, but that seems like such an obvious joke.
Full of disappointments this episode is.
Yeah, it really is.
Okay, here's my problem with the double wedge, right? You saw heavier people, heavier athletes, they get to the double wedge, they grab onto the bar, and it immediately sinks into the wedge, essentially. And it's much more difficult for them to get out of that. And so that is what I think led to a lot of people getting uneven, and then it being practically impossible for them to get uneven, because half of the bar is now stuck, and the other half is now not stuck. And it just seemed much more difficult for heavier people, because it was sinking too much, whereas the lighter people were able to keep it from sinking too much because obviously they weren't as heavy and they didn't drag it down as much. And it just felt, the whole thing felt super finicky and just ridiculously touchy to like any sort of mistake. And I mean, we saw the results, which was basically like pretty much anybody's going to fail here unless they get lucky enough to either have enough time to go extremely slowly and extremely carefully, or they're just going to be able to make big enough jumps to get to the end.
Yeah, I think the characteristic of an obstacle that is really fun to watch and is a good obstacle is one that you can make a little bit of an error on and be able to come back from it, because that makes for some really great TV moments when someone, you know, misses something, but they're able to recover. And that's something that the salmon ladder is really good for, because you can do it slightly wrong and have the bar be uneven and be able to correct it. This is just something that once one side of that starts to sink, there's nothing you can do because it's literally sliding. Like you can't fix that. It's like when people's shoes are wet on the jumping spider. It's just frustrating to watch because there's nothing they can do.
Exactly. And they've had this problem in the past. Last year, it was the roulette wheel, where you miss that transition once and you're done. It's over. There's nothing you can do about it. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like such a bad place to have that, because they're almost done with stage two. You know, they're about to beat it. This should be the point in the stage, essentially, where it's like, oh man, they're running out of time, they need to get through this quickly. And instead it's like this super slow, meticulous obstacle where one tiny little mistake and they're done. And it's just frustrating. It's not, it, like, not to mention the fact that there's 3.5 minutes to complete stage two, which I think is that's just way too long. Like, this should be more about speed, in my opinion, right? Like, it shouldn't have these obstacles that are so ridiculously slow. Like, this is a stage three obstacle. Why is it here in stage two?
I can't tell you. I didn't design the course. I'm sorry.
It's all your fault, though.
I know. I should have submitted an obstacle to that contest they're having.
Finally, we have the wall flip, which is the final obstacle. It's a take on the whatever it was before, the wall lift, I guess, where they basically flip the wall over. I guess this is to avoid that awkwardness of like having the wall slam down on you after you pick it up and go under. I think I prefer that, though, still. I think I prefer the wall lift. This was, I don't know, it didn't seem like an obstacle of Ninja Warrior, right? Like, it seemed like, oh yeah, they're lifting things.
Yeah, it's definitely safer than the wall lift, probably, because when they lift it, like, there is that chance it'll just fall down on them and they'll die. But it's more fun to watch them lift it because they look like superheroes, like lifting a car. Like, it looks so good.
Exactly. And I feel like the urgency is more there, right? Yeah. Where it's like with the wall flip, it's like they could just run across it, but okay, they got to flip it first and then they run across it.
Yeah.
Whereas like with the walls, there's literal barriers between you and the buzzer, and you need to get through those barriers by lifting them up and going under. And so it's like, how are they going to get through all of that? But with the wall flip, it was more like, oh, well, they're just going to flip them over and they're going to get there. That's fine.
Yeah, well, we're going to have a lot of bad news about flip things tonight.
Very true. So that is stage two. Overall, I was not a fan. I feel like they have upped the difficulty in ways that I don't really appreciate. The finickiness, the touchiness, I don't like that. Plus the fact that, again, it's really just more difficult upper body things with a longer time limit. And that's not really what I want to see from stage two. I feel like we get enough of that in stage three. So overall, I was just not super high on this stage two.
Yeah, I really hope that the producers take a note of how people respond to this. And worth mentioning right now, American Ninja Warrior was just renewed, I think yesterday, for another season, in case there's any doubt in anyone's mind.
Yes, and I thought it was funny because they kept calling it like stage or season six,
yeah.
Of which, like, on the season finale, they called this season eight, and they called the one that Joe Morovsky completed stage two first in season six.
Yeah, I was so confused.
I mean, like, it is season six for NBC rather than like Esquire as a whole or at G4, but it's still like the wrong terminology. It's not the terminology that the show uses. So just very, very strange wording there. But yes, we will see another season of American Ninja Warrior. And as far as I am aware, the ratings just keep going up, and this is their highest rated season yet. So they're still moving up in the world.
Yeah, but I do hope that they realize that people, you know, it's fine not to have a winner. I don't think that there should be a winner every season. You know, it's nice to see that, but it would diminish it if there's a winner every year. But you have to see people get close. More than two people get to stage three. I just don't think that that's what most people want to see. So hopefully they take a note that, you know, you need a few more people to root for at the end there.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, I don't even mind having just two people at stage three. I feel like that happens a lot, or not a lot, but it happens on Sasuke occasionally. And it's happened on American Ninja Warrior before, when Brent Stephenson was the only person to make it to stage three. And like, there's sort of like an epic feel of that, right? Where it's like only two people have made it, and now they're two people against stage three. And I like, there's something that's still entertaining about that. It's the way that people failed, right? Yeah. Because you know that so many other people could have been in stage three.
Yeah, I shouldn't say I have a problem with only two people making it to stage three. I have a problem with only two people making it to stage three when I know what I know about the contestants and how many of them should have and could have gotten there.
Right.
So yeah, I agree with you about that. So I'm hoping that the producers take the note, and for next year, try not to make so many high variable obstacles.
Yeah, it's kind of like, and this is like a really nerdy reference, I guess, but like in video games, when designers try to up the difficulty, and instead of like actually making the game like tactically harder, they just like add a ton of health to the enemies and make you have less health, where it's just like, okay, you've technically made this harder, but not in a fun way.
Yeah.
Like it's not, and not in a way where they're actually exhausting their abilities, just in a way where, oh, little slip and they're done.
Yeah. Or it's harder to get to the next level because there's this one button you can press where you just die. Randomly, you just lose a life. It's like, I guess does make it harder, but it doesn't make it more fun.
But that's it for the complaining here.
Yes. We can't promise that.
Well, there'll be a couple instances in the future, but, we'll get into the athletes now. First up was Michael Torres, the 21-year-old carpenter, and his package is all about his crazy finish in stage one and how it was like down to the wire there, like quite literally.
Yeah. I have a question for you that reveals how much I don't remember about American Ninja Warrior before I started podcasting about this. Was it always that stage two was determined, the order was determined by the producers, and stage three is determined by your time in stage two? Or, sorry, go.
Stage two is determined by your time in stage one, and that's why Michael Torres won first. I imagine either they made an exception for Jesse Graff, or they just edited Jesse Graff to go last, instead of Thomas Stillings.
Because she wasn't the only one that was out of order, I don't think. I think there were a couple other ones.
Yeah, I don't think they've stuck to the actual order in stage two in any tournament. I think they do still, you know, fuss about with it.
Okay, I was just wondering.
They do run according to, because that's why Brian Arnold, he in one of his appearances in Vegas waited to press the button on stage one until the last second so that he could go first,
right,
which would give him extra time to recover before stage three. Ultimately, that turned out to be a mistake because that was the introduction to the jungle obstacle in stage two, and he didn't know the right path. And you know, that's history, but. Anyway, Michael Torres, he's similar to Brian Arnold going first. He has a lot of trouble with this first obstacle. It takes almost 30 seconds to hook that first ring onto the hook and just isn't able to get through this obstacle.
Yeah. And unfortunately, he won't be the only person whose run is shot by the ring swing. But I think it's so hard for these people who go first. And the ring swing isn't a completely new obstacle, but this one is different. And, you know, it's always tough to be the first person on a new obstacle.
Yeah, he does something fairly impressive at the end where he reaches over, but the bar seems a little off center to where you swing. So you have to grab to the side with your right arm and then somehow get your left arm around. And I think that threw him off a little bit. So he fell off of it and then was holding on to that last ring with just one arm for a little while and tried to get enough momentum to get back to the bar, but was just not able to. And he falls into the water.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, Michael Torres has a lot of time to become a better athlete because he is only 21.
Yes, very true. Next up was Najee Richardson, and I was not happy that he was going second.
Yeah, well, this was still the point when I wasn't sure how much editing was changing the order, because I didn't remember the times from stage one. So I wasn't super nervous about him going this early, because I thought this is all predetermined. And I was excited because he got like a lot of decent hype in the opening montage or whatever you call that. I was excited by how much they were highlighting him. But yeah, this was really disappointing.
Yeah. And they showed him last season failing in the qualifying and how that was a big disappointment for him and that he wants to do better this year. And I didn't even remember that he had competed last season. So that was interesting to know.
Also, I'm pretty sure that they were playing the instrumental of One Day More from Les Mis in the background of this, which is so weird. But I was like, oh, he's like, you know, because he's like the Phoenix. He's like fighting another day or whatever. So it was very inspirational. So I had high hopes.
This is why we need your expertise on the podcast.
Yeah, not a lot of musical references on American Ninja Warrior, but I won't miss them if there is one.
Yes, he gets to the salmon ladder, but he misses a rung there and goes into the water. It's just a small slip here. They try to say, oh, it's because going down is harder. But I think it was just like he didn't quite see what he was doing on one side of the salmon ladder. And he didn't place it or put it in correctly. And he goes down into the water.
Yeah, but he says he will be back, which, you know, I took note of that when people specifically said that, because I get nervous about some of my favorites not coming back next year, more so than I have with other seasons.
Yeah. Next up was a montage, but it was a montage of just one person. So it was more of just like a skipped run, I guess.
It was a recap.
Yeah. Ethan Swanson, who gets they're very consistent about who they're not showing. And so yet again, yeah. Ethan Swanson is not shown. He fails at the salmon ladder. He does get an Akbar Shanana, but that's about it.
Yeah. And this is also when Matt welcomes us back from the commercial break and says it's the Super Bowl of the ninja season. Trying to relate to you, Taryn.
Really? Is that relating to me?
It means it's your favorite day of the year because you care so much about that.
Next up was Adam Rail, the 23-year-old concrete worker. And almost immediately I said, it is the concrete barber.
Yes, we finally have confirmation. Every week that he's been on, we've asked, is this the concrete barber? And it is.
Yes, he's also the third walk-on to ever make it to stage two, which I thought was an interesting statistic.
Yeah, and he's also the guy with the crazy Fargo mom.
Oh,
so this guy has a lot of stuff about him that we've learned throughout the season.
Another interesting fact, when he was on the salmon ladder, Akbar says he looks comfortable and swole.
Yeah, and he looks as strong as concrete, which is easy.
Yes, and basically he gets to the top of the salmon ladder, but he loses his grip on the wave runner and he will not be the last to do so.
Yeah, and these wave runner falls are so frustrating because like you blink and you miss it. They just fall right off. It's not like you can really struggle against it once you lose your balance on that thing or your grip gives out. You're just down. You're just into the water.
Yep. Unfortunate. Next was Josh Levin, the 22-year-old engineering student. We got a package about his rock climbing coach again. This is the package that we were introduced with when we saw him for the first time. And this time she is going to be watching through FaceTime. Don't forget, through FaceTime, on stage for his stage two run.
Yeah. I wonder why she couldn't before, but I'm glad that she was able to. It was kind of weird that he was like, she'll finally be able to see me through FaceTime. Like, okay, well, I'm glad that she's at least watching it. But yeah, this was a callback to the very first thing we learned about him, as you mentioned. So this was a very sweet package. I'm always rooting for Josh. I think he's kind of the undisputed rookie of the year at this point, I think.
Yeah, probably. He gets pretty far here. Akbar says Levin can levitate. He's got to levitate here on the salmon ladder. And
yeah,
he does.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, he does. This is the first one I noticed too, where the bursts of fire were like very distracting, I thought, because they're just like really short bursts that are like huge. It's not, I don't know. I felt like if I were out on the course and I heard just like loud fire come out of nowhere near me, that would be very distracting.
I imagine so. Not as distracting as the Japanese announcer in Sasuke, but still probably pretty distracting. This is also the first time we learn about the salmon ladder that going up, there is no minimum amount of rungs that you need to go up. It's just as soon as you can get to the bar, essentially, is when you can stop. So you don't have to go up as many rungs if you don't want to, which is a bit of a departure from how they usually do it. But I like it a lot because I like less rules, more just like do whatever you can to beat the obstacle. So I like this rule.
Yeah, rules are going to be a problem. So yeah. Anything that allows ninjas to use more creativity, do things their own way, as long as they can get through it. We always like that.
Yes, and he does. He makes it through the wave runner. He's the first person to do so. He seems to have plenty of grip strength left. So I'm feeling good about Josh Levin, especially the fact that he was one of the only people to complete the wedge in qualifying. So I felt like that was going to be his only obstacle after the wave runner. And he was probably going to be able to make it through that. Unfortunately, though, when he gets to the wave, to the double wedge, he takes a lot of time before he gets in there. And then once he's in there, he fails the transition to the next bar. I'm really not sure what happened here. Either he ran out of grip strength or he just wasn't able to get enough momentum or enough height on his jump essentially to the next bar. And he's not able to grip it when he grabs and he falls into the water.
Yeah, I was very surprised here. I like looked down to write something down. And when I looked up, he was just in the water. And there's so many of these where we didn't get to see a lot of runs. We got to see a couple, but we didn't get to see a lot where we really got to see a lot of fight and determination in people where they're fighting through pain. It's just so many of these were just, they make a slip and they're down.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, I feel like I wanted to see people, especially on the wedge, more like pushing through the pain. And we didn't get to see a lot of that.
Unfortunate. Next up was Grant McCartney, the 28-year-old flight attendant. His package is about this friendship he has with Neil Craver, and apparently they have a bromance going on.
Yeah, the world's most exhausting duo to hang out with, I bet.
Yeah, this came out of nowhere for me. I had no idea that they were friends. Obviously, they seem like they would make great friends. We also saw a bit more of Grant McCartney than I would have hoped for, but...
Yeah, we get the Amanda Kimmel, like, entire butt is blurred.
Yeah, that was interesting. So he takes on this course. He misses his first two attempts at hooking the ring on the hook, and then starts going sideways. But he was able to muscle through there and get to the salmon ladder. But he looks really fatigued by then. So at this point, I'm already thinking, yeah, he's probably done.
Yeah. Yep. Then we get the conventional. He's a big boy. All that stuff from Akbar.
Very much so. He fails the transition after going down to the up part, and that's all there is for Grant this season.
Yep.
I did note, yes, he had an interview with his brother, and his brother was like, "I'm so proud of you just for making it this far," and stuff. And they were hugging, and I was like, "Oh, Christine, thank God." Christine says, "I'll let you two have a moment," because, like, oh man, I'm really glad she let them have that, you know.
Thank you, Christine. She's so kind. Yeah. And then we have his best friend, apparently.
Yes. Next was Neil Craver, the 35-year-old photographer. The interesting statistic here. They said he is one of 9 athletes to make it to stage 2 in the last 2 seasons, but has failed at the salmon ladder both times and didn't fail at the salmon ladder.
No, we didn't get that thing that we've been having all season. Actually, this happens every season where it's like big deal about the thing that he always fails on, and then they fail on it again. That seems to always happen.
Yeah.
But he looks great. I love his tattoos. He always has like those temporary tattoo things. But they really went all out this time. He looks like a sorority girl going to her first party, like after she got into a new sorority.
You know, I was thinking, yeah, he looked great until you said that. Now I'm like, oh, well, maybe not. All right. Well, not very into this next montage / recap / skipped run because it was Flip Rodriguez. Did we not talk about it? He made it past the salmon ladder. He immediately fails on the wave runner. He backflips into the water, but that's really about it. It's the same failure that we will continue to see quite a few times in this episode. And that's another thing about the whole episode, is that we kept seeing the same failure over and over, which is just very frustrating.
Yeah. Philadelphia Redux.
Yeah. But this time we have Flip Rodriguez, who was skipped. They said very tragic circumstances. He got disqualified because he skipped the second board on the wave runner. They made it very clear that the rules were read to him, but either he forgot or he wasn't listening or something, because he tries to make the jump without touching the second board and he makes it, but he gets disqualified.
Yeah, this sucks. Like, it's hard for me to not use profanity here. I will restrain, but I hate this. Like, it's not that I don't think that he necessarily shouldn't be disqualified or whatever. Like there should be rules, but I just, this doesn't sit well with me at all. Like, I just feel like you should have more obstacles, like we always say, where you should be able to do it whatever way you want, as long as it's effective. And you know, you don't just go around it. But yeah, I love Flip. He's one of my all time favorites forever. And I didn't get to even see his run. So
yeah, it's the kind of thing where it's like usually they're making a television show, and that's the excuse for all the things we don't like about the show. But in this instance, you're making a television show. Don't make rules that have people disqualified so easily, because nobody wants to see somebody disqualified. You know, make the obstacle so that it's impossible to jump from the first board to the end. If that's what you don't want people to do, right? Like, there are ways to design the obstacle around the fact that you have to have these rules. And instead of having the rules, which is just bad television, just design them in a way that you have to use everything you can to get through them. And ideally, they're also not super finicky. So yeah, just I feel like there's a much better way to approach this. And it's really unfortunate. I mean, clearly they felt like they clearly felt very like they were in a pickle with Flip, right? Because he has this incredible story this season, a lot of support into this, and it's obvious why they didn't show the run, because that would have made people even more upset having to watch him get disqualified. So they just kind of was like, let's just sweep this under the rug as much as we can, because this was a bad outcome.
Yeah, it's terrible, and I really hope that it doesn't leave a bad taste in Flip's mouth, and that he's able to come back next year.
I think he will, but yeah, it's unfortunate. Next was Chris Wilczewski, the 27-year-old gym owner, and I really felt good about Chris. I felt like he had it. We got a package about his gym and how, I mean, we got testimonials about his gym. It was a very impressive package of basically an advertisement for his gym. I would love to go to it if it were anywhere near me, but unfortunately I can't. I was very excited. He cleared the Wade Runner. He gets all the way to the double wedge, and I obviously knew that this was going to be the make or break moment of his run. And as soon as he gets onto that first bar, it sinks, and he tries to get out of it and he can't because it's stuck. And so it takes even more effort, and it's clearly just much more difficult for anybody that's heavier. And I mean, being heavy is already a disadvantage on grip obstacles or any sort of climbing obstacles, but especially on something like this, like it's not like more difficult in a fair way, in that like you have more strength, but more weight as well. It's difficult in the sense that like it's literally stuck in this weird kind of like glass wedge thing, and it's incredibly difficult to control that bar. And he gets fairly far, but he can't get out of the fact that he gets stuck, and he goes down into the water.
Yeah, we get my favorite Akbarism of the episode, though. It was checkmate for Will Chesky, because his name has chess in it. Taryn,
you don't get to make puns about Chris Wilczewski when he fails in the stupid double wedge. That's not how
even
it
if
works.
They're chess oriented.
No,
fine,
maybe if they were science related.
We've had so many of those. It's time for some chess material. I don't mean to make light of this. I love him, and I was very bummed out about this. And you know, we've covered that I'm also not high on this obstacle.
Yeah, I really felt like this was Chris's year. He was doing really well. It's so unfortunate that he failed here. But you know, that's just how it is. Next up was Joe Morawski, the 27-year-old weatherman Joe Morawski. They talked about how he has reached stage 2 4 consecutive times and has never failed on stage 2. And this is exactly what they said when he went up to do the final in Philadelphia. So I was immediately concerned, especially because they were advertising Drew Dreschel before the commercial. And then I expected Drew Dreschel to be up next. Yeah. But instead, it was Joe Morawski all of a sudden. And I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, that's a smart read, actually. I did not notice that. But now that you point that out, yeah, that's true. Fun fact about the package that they were showing about him beating stage 2 in season 6. That was the first episode of American Ninja Warrior I ever saw. I then went back and watched the whole season. But I was at the gym and it was just on. And it totally grabbed me. I was like, he's a weatherman. He's not even an athlete, which is, you know, how they get the casuals, which is just like, you know, these normal people with these amazing abilities. But yeah, so it was fun to see that. It's like, I remember that.
Yeah. And you know, Ninja Warrior, good show to have on at a gym, I must say.
Yeah,
I've never seen it on in any gyms I've been in, but they should be playing it.
Yeah. So
it's just like Friends, really, like every single time.
It just really gave me a lot of motivation. But yeah, and he says that he has one fall per season, and he already fell in Philadelphia. So hopefully that's good luck for Vegas, but unfortunately not so.
Not the case. He talked about wanting to be the best, and unfortunately was not given that chance this season because he gets a little hung up on the ring swing. His momentum starts going sideways, but like most of the other athletes, he's able to get out of it. It didn't cost him as much. I felt like he still had a shot here, unlike most people that get caught up on the ring swing, especially because it's Joe Morawski, who is like the stage 2 king, basically.
And he's able to skip 3 rungs on the salmon ladder at a time.
Yes, that, and he easily made up that time. He goes down, he gets up 3 rungs on the salmon ladder transition, and then only goes up one more rung before transitioning to the wave runner, where he unfortunately just slips off. And I don't even think this was an issue of grip strength, because unlike the other athletes, we didn't see his fingers peel off. It was more just that like it got a little bit too crooked, and that was all it took, and he just went down.
Yeah, and I didn't like the way that they kept comparing him to his prior performances on stage 2, because it's a different thing. It's a different course. It's not like you know, he's tackling the exact same course that he's beaten twice and now isn't able to do it. You know, they kept being like, oh, he always beats stage two, but it's different. It's not like, I don't know, it's a harder course. So I didn't like the way that they kept comparing it to prior performances, because like he's just as good as always, but he didn't go as far because the course is different.
Yeah. And this stage two is basically stage three light. So
yeah,
unlike other seasons,
basically stage one hard mode qualifying or the finals or whatever was like harder than stage one. So this whole season is topsy turvy. I feel like you can't compare people's performances this season to prior seasons as any indicator of, you know, whether they've improved or not.
Yes. And that's basically all we've got for Joe. This is a disappointing finish. He usually gets to stage three. And I really felt like, even though the stage three course was incredibly difficult, I felt like he had a real shot there, but unfortunately just isn't able to get there. And next up we have Drew Dreschel, the 27-year-old gym owner. He gets the testimonial package. He's been doing this for 6 years. This is his year. This is his time. And I'm feeling good. Joe Morawski just went down. There's no way Drew can go down too. Drew has to finish this.
Yeah. And I love what Drew is saying about, you know, I'm not a climber. I'm not a parkour person. I'm not a pole vaulter, whatever. Like, this is my sport. This is not a skill that I had in some other area and then transitioned into American Ninja Warrior. Like, I train specifically for American Ninja Warrior. And I really like the idea of American Ninja Warrior growing into its own as its own specific sport.
Yeah. And very impressive showing here in stage two. He goes backwards down on the down part of the salmon ladder. And I immediately thought, like, clearly his experience in Sasuke is making him a much more well-rounded athlete for American Ninja Warrior, because American Ninja Warrior steals a lot of Sasuke's ideas. And so he has experience with this down part of the salmon ladder. And so he's able to get through it very quickly and then go back up the second part as well. Then he gets on to the wave runner and he gets about like nearly to the end of the first board, but not as far down as most people do. So I'm expecting like, oh, it's a bigger jump to the second board, but no, it's a jump to the platform. And I had a heart attack. I thought he failed because he loses he barely grabs onto the second board, and then he, you know, his hands fall off, and the angle that we're seeing, you don't see the platform. You don't see that he's making it there. You just see him losing his grip, what it seems like, on the second board. And I really thought he was done. And I was like, oh my God, he just barely made it through that. I don't know how he did that. We later find out it was in fact planned. Yeah. He made the jump and then made a token effort to grab onto that second board before stepping on the platform, the landing platform. And this to me really showed just how dumb that rule was that Flip got eliminated for, because clearly you don't need the second board. And like really, is it really taking this huge athletic feat for Flip to touch the second board before coming down to the platform? Like, it was like, there's no difference there, right? Yeah. Like, it's dumb.
You literally just have to look like you are pretending to grab it.
Exactly.
And then it's fine. It's so arbitrary. There was a moment I felt like, even like in the crowd, of just like, oh my God, like, does that count? Is that because he didn't go in the water. So, you know, you just don't know if he was disqualified for a second or anything. So that was terrifying, but
yes,
made for an exciting moment.
Yep. And then I immediately note, like, oh my God, he's running out of time. This is not good. I'm not happy about how much time he has right now, and he's taken a lot of time in between some of these obstacles, and then he gets through the double wedge very slowly, which seems to be the way you probably have to do it at this point, which is how ridiculous it is. And so I'm really concerned about time here, because I'm thinking, okay, I was really confident that Drew is going to make it through here, but what if nobody beats the second stage and Drew is just the person that gets the furthest and he runs out of time? That was my concern now. And so he's getting through the double wedge. He does. He makes it through. He's the first person to do so, and really one of only two people to do so. And by then, when he gets to the walls, I was like, okay, thank God, he's definitely made this, unless these walls are just ridiculous. And of course, he just waltzes through, just strolls away, and casually hits the button at the end with just over a second left. Drew has finished stage two. My heart was just like in shatters. I nearly died from this run.
Yeah, and we get a super early Palm Wonderful run of the night. So RIP Jesse Graff. Because come on, I hate this Palm thing. I've really come to hate this Palm Wonderful thing of the night. I really have, because I'm not great at reading the edit. it. You know, I'm not as up on it as you are, but this is one thing that makes it so obvious that I can't trick myself out of thinking like Jesse Graff is going to finish and not get the pawn thing.
Come yeah. And yeah, basically that's it's unfortunate. You know, I feel like there are better ways to do this. I mean, like maybe this isn't in the spirit of this particular show, but for the Ninja Warrior episodes that aired on G4, what they used to do is like the fail of the Nidus or something like that, like the ninja killer, like they were like, you know, it was part of the montage that they gave away some sort of award. And I feel like that works a lot better than, you know, this sort of thing, which just spoils a lot.
The pod doesn't stream like it adds anything. Run of the night. Yeah. Okay. Also, there are other ways to do product placement, like paint a giant bottle of pom on the bottom of the pool and show people drinking pom at every possible moment. Oh, wait, they already do that. So we don't need any more of this product placement.
I mean, we are talking about it.
I know. And I'm drinking pomegranate Kavita right now. So
I don't think that counts.
I'm competing. I'm showing my disdain for this product by drinking a different pomegranate beverage.
What I thought was funny was that we go to commercial and then right as we come back, we get a recap of Drew's run right after it happens, as though it happened like sometime in the past, like yeah, years ago.
Like, remember this?
Yeah.
While you were away, we talked more about Drew's run.
Yes, basically.
Thought about it and how great it was.
Next up was Brian Arnold, and he's the 38-year-old salesman. He's part of the Wolf Pack. We talked to his friend Ian, as well as Noah Kaufman. They're friends of the podcast. I was looking forward to Brian's run, but going right after Drew just made me nervous. I was like, oh man, unless everybody finishes from this point on, I don't have high hopes here. He had a package about Isaac and how Isaac beat the course, and he was training with Isaac and how he wants to match what Isaac did. Like, he was very emotional as Isaac came down from the tower. He wants to be that person this time. He wants to finish this course. And I love the determination Brian has. Like, he has so much love for this course and for Ninja Warrior. And I just sucks to see what happens here in stage two.
Yeah, fortunately, he does have a very good showing, though, and does some really impressive things, particularly on the Wave Runner. It just doesn't move. You know, yeah. It's incredible. And that's grip strength, but it's also core. And it just shows how incredibly balanced of an athlete he is.
Yes, Akbar says, it's not even moving. He's so strong.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Akbar, we're the same. But yeah, so that was ridiculous. And he has one of these really unfortunate things where the ball starts to slide on the wedge and there's no way to correct.
Yeah, I had quite a lot of profanities in my notes at this point. it's the stupid obstacle. It just sinks as soon as he grabs onto it. And it doesn't happen with other people. He's just too heavy for it. And it's just it's the worst thing ever. Like, what is he supposed to do there? It's just dumb. It's just poorly designed. You can see the reason it sinks is because the scaffolding holding it up, they're moving. And so it's separating a little as he sinks down further and further. And then when he tries to get it up, it's now stuck in the glass. And yeah. it's just like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, the move here is to have an obstacle that does the exact same thing, but doesn't have these stupid mechanical issues like the bar hop or something like that, where you're jumping with the bar in your hands from cradle to cradle for the bar, which is still something that you can make a tactical error on and mess up with technique. And it's a little finicky because it moves back and forth in the holder, but you know, doesn't automatically disadvantage a certain type of body. And there are ways to fix it. If you land poorly, you can lose your grip on one arm and still hang on, something like that.
Yeah. And this is the guy who we just talked about being so strong that he doesn't even move the Wave Runner. So it's clearly not a problem and not an issue of tactical ability or core strength or any sort of balance. It's just the fact that it's much more difficult for him, I feel like. And it's just so frustrating to watch. But that's it. I'm not going to complain. Whatever. It's fine.
Yeah. One thing that I will complain about that I feel entitled to complain about is Christine's question for him, where he comes down to the interview and Christine is like, Brian, how frustrated are you right now? Like, that's not a good question. That's not a good interview question. Yeah. I just feel like you should ask something a little bit more thought provoking instead of just being like, that sucks. How sad are you? You know?
Yeah, I feel like the sideline questions have always been an issue for me on American Ninja Warrior. I feel like, to be fair to Christine, I feel like she is an improvement over the previous iteration,
a couple of
iterations. I think that Allison Hayslip, I believe, was doing it when G4 was in charge, and she was really good, but they got rid of her because I guess she's not cool enough. But
I should do it.
You're right. But yeah, it's a difficult thing to do, and I feel like they haven't really quite perfected it yet. But let's move on to Thomas Stillings, the 22-year-old parkour instructor. We get a package about how confident and wacky he is.
Yeah, a lot of wacky people.
Yes, we also find out that he is Brent Stephenson's protege, and he's actually one of these people that has been waiting for a while to be able to compete on Ninja Warrior. And I did not know this about him, despite the packages before this and seeing him before this. I learned a lot about Thomas Stillings, and Brent was in his package giving him a testimonial about how funny and wacky he is.
Wait, he's been waiting to compete, meaning that
until he was old enough.
He's only 21?
He's 22. He competed last season. He had been waiting to compete.
But he just got engaged. Oh my God. Having a crisis. Okay. I did not know that he was that young. Yeah. This was the last few weeks. I feel like we've been learning about all these connections between ninjas that just we were not aware of. Like, first of all, we were completely blindsided by the Thomas Stillings, Daniel Gill rivalry in the first place. And now he has all these other connections. And, Neil and Grant are best friends, and Jesse and Megan have a rivalry. It's like, all these people have connections.
Yeah. And I feel like this is the most interesting part of the show. And I don't know why they don't focus on it more, because it's interesting to me, at least, it's more interesting to know that Thomas Stillings is Brent's protege than it is to know that Thomas Stillings has like a brother that's like super heartwarming or whatever. You know what I mean?
That he has genie pants.
I mean, I guess so, but like we know who these other athletes are. So like, tell us what their relationship is and what, like, I mean, they do that. They definitely do that too, but I think they could have more of a focus on it. I think it would make for more interesting packages, at least in my opinion.
Here's an idea. How about the Palm crazy, beautiful friendship of the night? And we learn like who's friends with each other, and that those connections, and also doesn't spoil anything.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thomas Stillings takes on the course. He tries to get an extra rung on the salmon ladder on the transition, but he doesn't get enough height. And so he fails that transition and goes down. And Akbar is upset. He says, that wasn't what was supposed to happen.
Is he a big Thomas Stillings fan, I guess? He'll remember the name Thomas Stillings. That's what Thomas wanted out of all of this. I mean, I guess it worked. I didn't know who he was before the season.
I mean, he did well, and yeah. He wore the genie pant, so.
Yeah. Oh my God, there was so much pant happening. I couldn't believe how much, like, extra fabric there was on the salmon ladder. It was just billowing everywhere. Seemed, like, not the most functional ninja wear. Akbar was saying that if he fell, it would be like a parachute.
Right? Not maybe he was the levitating one.
Yeah. I don't think that's what parachutes do. But.
Instead of Josh Levin, he's levitating. He was using the magic genie pants.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, I guess he could have used a little more of it. But yeah, that's it for Thomas Stillings. A pretty good run for the whole season, basically. I think he did really well. He showed he made a name for himself, as you said. So I expect to see him back next year and probably going to be doing pretty well. We saw him also testing for stage three when we saw the stage three tests. So clearly he's decent at stage three obstacles.
Oh.
We also saw David Campbell testing, so that was pretty fun. I got to see David Campbell in Vegas competing in stage three. Next up was Jake Murray, the 29-year-old wedding photographer, and huge package, testimonials explaining about the corn dog versus a cheeseburger. I had high hopes for Jake Murray. I really felt like they were building up to something here, but I guess not.
Yeah. Well, which would do you prefer, hamburger or a corn dog? What's better for you?
Well, for what? For eating or for wearing in a fanny pack while competing on Ninja
Either
Warrior?
Or. Do both.
Well, obviously, I'd choose the cheeseburger over a corn dog for eating.
I think it was just a hamburger. I don't know if cheese was part of it.
If cheese wasn't part of it, then that's just a travesty in my eyes, because who wants to just eat a hamburger? Except for people that don't like cheese. She just pointed to herself.
Well, I don't.
Yeah, that's right. I exposed you.
I don't
cheese
eat,
hater.
Eat cheese. It's only I don't like it. I just don't eat it.
Anyway, he looks a little tired by the time he gets to the Wave Runner, but he does really well here. He makes big jumps on the Wave Runner, makes a big jump from about halfway through the first board to the second board, and then from the second board jumps to the landing platform, which was, I think, a very effective way of doing this obstacle, and manages to get through it despite the fact that I think he's pretty tired. And really, by the time he gets to the butterfly wall, climbing up that rope, he's clearly very gassed. He has a lot of trouble just even getting over the rope. So I didn't have super high hopes by the time he got to the wedge, but I figured, you know, you don't need a whole lot of energy at this point. You just need to be able to manage this super touchy obstacle. But he isn't quite able to manage this obstacle. The fact that he's out of gas means that he ran out of juice just a little too much before the transition to the next bar on the double wedge. And when he tries to make the jump over to it, it's a little too far. He just has a little too much, wear and tear on his grip. And he goes down into the water.
Yeah. That said, this was my favorite run from Jake Murray the whole season, because I have found him to be a fun character, but not someone that I super connect with personally or rooted for much more than anybody else. So seeing him really be exhausted and really fight, and, you know, not just like being crazy on the course and actually being really serious and working so hard, and you can see the determination on his face, you know, going, pushing his limit. That was one of the few runs we got to see tonight where someone is really pushing past that pain. And I really enjoyed seeing it.
Yeah. And afterward, we get a very somber interview with him where he's very serious, clearly very upset. And it's a very different Jake Murray than the one we're used to seeing. So yeah, I mean, we definitely saw a different side of him here.
Yeah. And I was very happy with that. I feel like it's fine to be crazy, but I also want to see that you're taking this really seriously.
Yes. And something I noticed, and I don't think this is the first or the last time that Akbar does this in this episode, but when he's on the bar trying to get to the second bar on the double wedge, Akbar is like, no, go for it, make the transition. And then when he fails, when Akbar is doing the recap, Akbar says, yeah, he rushed the transition, man. I don't know.
I didn't notice
that. We were telling him to do that.
Okay. Akbar. Well, he was a football player, not a coach. So
I guess so.
Bad call.
Next we get our final montage / skipped run of the night. Nicholas Coolidge, who again was skipped in the last episode, so not surprising that he gets skipped yet again. Akbar says he's too hot to melt, too cool to freeze, which I felt like was a little backwards, right?
That doesn't make any sense.
Right?
How can you be too cool? Okay, no, we don't need to deconstruct this. That's stupid. It also doesn't even mean anything, even if it was said in the right order.
Yes, but he fails at the Wave Runner, as many, many do. And that's it for Nicholas Coolidge. I don't think we saw a single run of his all season long, despite making it all the way to stage two. Next up was Daniel Gill, the 23-year-old personal trainer, and his package was all about this former NBA coach. This is my sports knowledge.
National basketball organization.
Yeah. whose daughter is trained by Daniel. And it was really just all about this coach. It was like, yeah, look how great this coach is. He's going to talk about Daniel. He says he's a top 10 basketball player.
Yeah.
Or at least he's at that level.
So I am on his Wikipedia page right now, just to make sure that this person actually like is a person and not just some like rando assistant coach for 2 years. But this guy actually is legit. He was the head coach for the New York Knicks for 5 years, and then head coach of the Houston Rockets for another couple of years. I had to Google him because I know a lot of sports. Basketball is not one that I know, because my hometown does not have an NBA team. Anyway, yeah, this was super weird. This guy, his name is Jeff Van Gundy. He was saying, oh, Daniel, he's so elite. I would compare him to a top 10 basketball player, like you said. But that's such a weird thing to say about someone who's already an athlete. It's just like if you're talking about hockey and you're like, oh, Sidney Crosby, he's so good at hockey. I would compare him to a top 10 baseball player. It's like he's already a top person in his own sport. Like this analogy is so unnecessary.
Yes. Very, very strange, I suppose. But, you know, they just wanted to get the NBA fans excited here, I imagine. Right. Like, look how legitimate we are. There's a legitimate sports person that's telling us that we're legitimate.
Yeah, that is an IndyCar.
Akbar says he called Daniel Roy last year for Rookie of the Year, and this year he calls him SOS, Sophomore on Success.
I feel like maybe Sophomore of the Season would be better than that because it fits with Rookie of the Year. But if you're going to go with SOS, I don't know.
Are you questioning Akbar?
What is it? Sophomore of Success?
Sophomore on Success.
That makes even less sense.
Yeah, you're right about that, but still.
Okay, whatever. So SOS, I have very few notes. He does very well.
Well, Akbar gets something wrong again.
Okay.
He says, so Daniel goes down on the down part of the salmon ladder, and then he's about to make the transition. Akbar says, watch how smooth he makes this transition. And then he transitions unevenly.
It was smooth. It just wasn't accurate, maybe. But it was like a beautiful motion. I don't know. Akbar makes a lot of bad predictions.
Yeah, that's very true. So Daniel he makes it through the Wave Runner. He spends a lot of time resting afterward, eating up some time, but it doesn't really matter. He gets to the wedge, and he gets halfway through the wedge, the double wedge, and he gets very uneven, as many people do. Luckily, he was close enough that he was able to make the transition to the next bar. He nearly fails there, but he does manage to make it. And then from there, he makes a long dismount to the landing platform and is able to complete the obstacle and get through stage two and be our second finisher of the night.
Yeah, second and final. So I guess that settles that rivalry with Thomas Stillings.
Yeah, I guess so.
But yeah, that was a super exciting run. You know, Daniel Gill is someone that I have always liked. I've never been, you know, he's never been one of my favorites because he's only been here for 2 years. He hasn't built up the favor that I have with people like Drew Dreschel. But I was super on the edge of my seat. This is the most excited I was the whole night because he was running up against the clock, and there were a couple times where it looked like he was going to fall.
Yeah. Close one.
It was definitely the dance training. I do just want to point out. It's definitely that he started dancing. I think that's what made the difference this year.
Finally, we get Jessie Graff, the 32-year-old stunt woman. And she gets this huge testimonial, you know, as she deserves. Testimonial package. How great it was. She completed stage one. She's an inspiration. You know, everything we would expect, basically. But up to this point, I wasn't told that this was a run to watch. So I was like, uh-oh, right?
Yeah.
Like, she competed in stage one, it was all about Jesse. Like, this is the one to watch. This is like the run of the season. And this one was like, look how awesome Jessie Graff is. And isn't it great that she's here?
Yeah. Also, like, remember how awesome her stage one run was? Remember that, guys?
Yeah, basically.
But yeah, I mean, at this point, I was under no belief that Jessie Graff was going to finish the stage. But I loved this package from her because, you know, she said something that, you know, it's been said a lot about her being the first person to get this far, but she says it very concisely. She says there are a lot of women who, if they don't see a woman do something, they assume it's impossible. This is something that's obviously super relevant right now in our political environment, and something that is super relevant, I think. You really can't be what you can't see. And there's a lot of people who think, you know, if they never see a person who looks like them or who comes from the same place as them do something, it's really, really hard to see yourself ever doing that, because some people need precedent. And we need people like Jessie Graff who don't need precedent, who can say, like, I'm going to be that person. I'm going to be the precedent. So I love that. And I thought that was a super important moment. And I like the way that she articulated that.
Yeah. I mean, she's clearly a very inspiring person, right? Like, and I don't even think that she necessarily feels like she has to be, but I think that she just is, right? Like, she's not trying to be just this inspiring person. She's just trying to be an athlete and trying to compete and do as well as she can and find her limits, as she said. And I really do think that if this stage had been this the stage that was there last season, I think she could have done it. I think that the fact that this was stage three light kind of ruined her chances, I think. And I mean, it's unfortunate, of course, that she's not able to complete this, but I think it really is a historical moment. Just the fact that she was able to get here. And honestly, I felt more emotional after she fails in stage two, just because that's when it kind of hit me like she made it here. Then when she actually completed the stage one, but she does have some trouble on the ring swing. She spends a lot of time there and goes really slow on the salmon ladder. And at this point, it's even more obvious that she does not have the time to finish this course, even if she does make it through. And then she loses her grip on the Wave Runner and does a nice little backflip into the water. And that is Jessie Graff's season.
Yeah. And she's still super positive about it. And, you know, it really is. I can't talk enough about how important it is that this happened and will continue to happen more and more in future seasons, hopefully, with Jessie and with other women. So she was one of the things that made this season. I think that a lot of times, you know, at least I have been a little bit down on this season throughout the different episodes, but she was just a star, and, you know, they rightfully hyped her up, sometimes maybe a little bit too much. But she was someone who overall brought up this season. This is like how I'll remember season 8, I think.
I mean, I think it'll be how most people remember season 8. I mean, it tends to be the thing that they advertise the most. And I think it's the thing that brings them the most viewers, too. So I definitely think that this will be something that will remain in the show's history for quite a while and be referenced quite a lot. Any sort of backlash that Casey gets, I imagine Jessie will start getting eventually, just for the sheer amount of airtime she's going to get in the future, I believe. So anyway, moving on to stage 3, we have 2 athletes left, and we get some interesting statistics on it. Daniel is the youngest ever to make stage 3, and Drew is only one of 2 athletes to ever reach stage 3 in Vegas twice. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, wait, really? Is that right? That doesn't seem right. Because it seems like more people have made stage 2 or stage 3 more than once, right? Like that seems absurd. But I went back, I did the research, and they're right. The only 2 people to have made stage 3 in Vegas more than once are now Drew and Joe. Everybody else has only made it to stage 3 once in Vegas. They're not counting Mount Midoriyama in Japan. In Sasuke, David Campbell has actually made it to stage 3 twice, being sent from American Ninja Warrior, but that wasn't Vegas. So technically only Drew and Joe have made it to stage 3 in Vegas. So that is where that stat comes from. And surprisingly enough, it is actually true.
Yeah, well, I actually heard that and just assumed that they meant in a row. But wow, that is a very shocking statistic.
Yes, especially because that means that obviously the 2, I mean, if you weren't aware before, Jeff and Isaac, both, that was their first attempt at both stage 3 and stage 4, which I believe is an unprecedented thing for anybody, including Sasuke athletes. So it's a crazy, crazy whole thing. Really, let's take a look at stage 3 here.
Let's do it.
So we got some new obstacles on stage 3. First is the key lock hang, which is basically an easier version, I guess, or a smaller version of the circuit board from qualifying, where you, instead of having these different sized balls, you have this sort of key shaped thing where you have to put it into the board in a certain way and then turn it in order to lock it, and then turn it again to be able to pull it out. And you go across just like the circuit board. And this was interesting because usually we're seeing these obstacles from qualifying be doubled or made harder. But this one did seem a little bit easier than the circuit board, despite the fact that it had the added difficulty of the key shaped hook, essentially. But overall, I didn't have any problems with this. I thought it was a good obstacle.
Yeah, this is fine. I loved the circuit board in qualifying, so I was not mad at seeing a version of it here.
Then we have the floating boards, which have been made more difficult because they're angled at the bottom. So when you're on the board, you're pulled back a little, which means you need to use your upper body a little more. I don't think they needed to make the floating boards more difficult because a lot of people have a lot of trouble with them as is. But obviously, when only 2 people made it and they're both 2 elite athletes, they didn't have much trouble with it. But still, I mean, I didn't have a huge problem with the change. And I like the floating boards in general as an obstacle. They require a lot of technique, so I like that. Then we have the ultimate cliffhanger. They haven't changed the ultimate cliffhanger's name, despite the fact that it's exponentially more difficult now than it used to be when it was still just the ultimate cliffhanger.
Yeah, I was also going to comment on the ultimate cliffhanger's name, because ultimate means last. So the one before this was like the penultimate cliffhanger then. Or if they change it again, this will be the penultimate. This can't be the ultimate cliffhanger if you're going to change it. Then it's not the ultimate one.
In Sasuke, when they added the first transition where you have to jump from one side to another, the crazy cliffhanger, and they have made, as we've talked about before, the more difficult cliffhanger where you have to jump back and forth, and they named that, I believe, the ultimate crazy cliffhanger. So they know how to name their cliffhangers, and apparently we don't.
Yeah, no, you got to do like the crazy cliffhanger, and then like the insane cliffhanger, and then like the should be institutionalized cliffhanger or something. Like, it can't be, it can't be ultimate if it's not the last one. You have to wait till you get canceled to call it that.
But this cliffhanger is, in fact, the most difficult one we have seen on American Ninja Warrior, at the very least. The Japanese one, despite being really ridiculous now, still might look a little easier, but it's clear the American one, it has some advantages over the Japanese one. The bars that you're grabbing onto are a little bit thicker. They have this this rock climbing foothold for the first jump, which makes it considerably easier as well. And overall, I think this is still an easier cliffhanger than the one we saw, the ultimate crazy cliffhanger in Japan. But it's still incredibly difficult, as we saw. And I was like, oh man, this is they're really amping up the difficulty here in stage three, because right off the crazy cliffhanger, you go into the curved body prop, which is just insane. I mean, we saw images from this in the preview, and I was honestly in disbelief. But when they actually showed it, it looked even more difficult than I anticipated, because you really do go up all the way at the end of it. And that's just ridiculous. The body prop is one of the most difficult obstacles there are in Ninja Warrior. And I mean, they really put this in there. Like, this is a difficult obstacle for sure.
Yeah, this is stupid hard. But we don't see, of the two people, we see zero of them fall on it. For various reasons.
Then we have the hang climb, which is unchanged as far as I'm aware. Always a difficult one, except for the rock climbers, who obviously have a much easier time with it, or at least are much more experienced, so make it look easier. And then this new obstacle called the walking bar, which is, I don't think it's actually totally new as far as I'm aware. I think I've seen it before. Maybe it was on Sasuke, but I'm pretty sure it was on American Ninja Warrior, where you have to go from side to side on a bar, just moving one side of the bar first. And then you go from that into the classic flying bar, which I like now. I like that they kept it at the end of stage three. It's a classic now. It's provided some great moments, just like the old sliding, whatever it is, in Sasuke used to. I like that they kept this here. And overall, after they showed the course, I said, so basically this is impossible. Like, there's no way anyone's going to do this. Just like I thought in Sasuke. But similar to Sasuke, we had this result where Drew, just flies past all the other competitors and makes the impossible seem totally doable before unfortunately failing.
Okay, are there like hella cicadas that you can hear?
What about?
Can you hear the hella cicadas outside my window? Cicadas?
What are cicadas?
Are you serious?
No idea what you're talking about. Cicadas? Is that a word?
I'm sorry.
Are you saying skaters?
Cicadas are the things that make noise at night that chirp.
Like birds?
Oh my god. The super loud bugs that chirp at night.
Bugs.
You have these in Massachusetts. Like, I know that you do.
Well, I'm sorry I'm not an entomologist.
Everyone in the world knows what cicadas are.
I would dispute that fact.
Oh my god.
What would that ever add to my life if I knew what they were called?
It's just never come up that there are these things that chirp really loudly at night in the summer.
Talk about them. We just, like the chirping bugs.
You do not say that. That's such a lie. And no one's ever been like, oh, cicadas?
No.
I can't believe that. Anyway,
so getting into Drew's run on stage three, I will say, despite all of the complaining that we definitely didn't do about the rest of the episode, I really enjoyed both runs on stage three. I feel like stage three is where American Ninja Warrior really shines. It's really where Sasuke shines as well. It's always one of the best stages, but I feel like this is what they do really right. The obstacles are much better in terms of, it's not just touchiness, it's truly about endurance, skill, strength, etc. It's meant to be upper body focused, endurance focused. They really are able to, I mean, obviously when only two people make it, they're able to take their time with it. And this made me feel like I was watching something that was really intense and really, I don't know, just really good. And I didn't have any issues with any of the ways that either of these two guys failed. I was very happy with stage three as a whole. I mean, even though it seems so much more difficult now, I think the fact that Drew was able to make it so far, just shows that it's not necessarily impossible. It's just that this is a difficult stage for now, and people will start training for it and they'll get better, and eventually they're going to do it.
Yeah, I think my only issue was that I would have preferred to see Drew go second. I know it's determined by their time, but they were hyping up Drew a lot more, which gave me more confidence in him. And just he's so much more experienced and seasoned that I felt like if I had to choose which one of them was going to win, it would have been Drew. So there was a little bit less suspense, I felt like, having Daniel go second. But yeah, I mean, it's a great stage, and they even played a little bit, a little clip of Drew on Sasuke for you. So that,
yeah, right.
Sasuke,
that was awesome.
Got some visual recognition.
And it should, because Drew has now become the first person to ever, granted the Japanese competitors aren't given the opportunity to do this, but the first person to ever make it the furthest in Sasuke and in American Ninja Warrior in Vegas. Levi Muhlenberg did make it the furthest in both ANW and Sasuke, but that was on the Sasuke course, not in Vegas. So he kind of got two for one there, which isn't quite as impressive. So yeah, really cool about Drew. And I had the same thought, which was I really would have liked to see Drew go second. But then when I thought about it, I actually kind of liked it because it did make me a little nervous that Drew was going first. And it made me think, oh, he might fail at any point here and Daniel might go further. And then when Daniel went, I was thinking Daniel might go further. And on top of that, considering Drew's reaction, which was, you know, very composed at the start, and then he got emotional, and then he had the interview with Daniel afterward, I feel like it fit the timeline correctly. And I'm really glad that they told that story, because that was really compelling to me as well. So ultimately, I'm happy with the way it went down. So getting into Drew's run, this package again was talking about, like, this is everything for Drew. This is all he does. He, you know, he eats, sleeps, lives, breathes Ninja Warrior, and he's like literally this is all I do, so I'd better be good at it, because you know, I got nothing else, essentially.
Yeah, it's like you in podcasting.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't think I'm quite Drew Dreschel level of podcaster, but maybe I'll aspire
someday
to be that way. So yeah, I mean, I liked the package, and again, I was kind of scared. I was like, oh man, he's going first. This is a little scary to me. It's making me a little extra nervous. He took on the key lock hang. Hold on. He took on the key lock hang, and he had it was a little awkward. I guess this would be my only complaint with the key lock hang, is that it is a little awkward to watch them just kind of like try to get the thing out. And it took a little longer than I would have wanted it to, but otherwise I think it was a cool obstacle, and he seemed to get through it pretty easily enough. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to tell what was going on at first, I think.
Yeah.
Just because it's like a tiny motion that they have to make to get the key out. And it's not like the cameras were like zoomed in there. So they just kind of looked like they were still for a while.
Yeah, I feel like it could have benefited from a top angle camera that showed the actual key thing come through the holes and twist and lock and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like to actually see the mechanism happening and then twisting out and pulling it out again. Just as like another angle to see what was actually happening. But overall, I liked the obstacle. Drew did really well. He then moves on to the floating boards, the more difficult ones. He's very careful here, very composed, and gets through them pretty fine. He just drops off of the third one, which I thought was fun. And then he gets to the cliffhanger, and I was nervous. I mean, I saw Drew do a very similar cliffhanger in Japan, and it is a harder one, you know, logistically with the actual, like I talked about, the ledges and stuff, but it was still nerve-wracking to see Drew take this on. There were still a lot of different ways that he could have failed here, and he just demolished it. He just sped through it like it was nothing. No issue whatsoever. He makes the first jump. He goes across the gap. He goes to the second jump like it's nothing. Like it's no problem in the world. I think that a lot of people, especially if Daniel hadn't gone right after him, would have seen this and said, oh, maybe the cliffhanger is just still too easy. But that's not the case. Drew is just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, this is, how could you not be nervous watching anybody do this? This looks impossible. And it's so long. There's so much involved.
It's my favorite obstacle. incredible to watch. It's just so good. It's you're nervous while he's on it, and it's so compelling just to see what's happening there. And you know, he goes onto the body prop next, which is also somewhat compelling, but it's a lot more boring to see him just kind of slowly walk up a thing as opposed to flying around on this tiny little ledge, which is just like, so it's great. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, the combination of this and the body prop immediately after it, it really looked like he like had webs like Spider-Man on like the like suction cups on the tips of his fingers. Like, he just stuck these things and landed and didn't look like he was going to budge on that or the body prop. It's just, I can't even wrap my mind around how a human body can do that.
I was astonished as he went up that second half of the body prop. I was just like, is this seriously happening? Like, really? Like, the body prop is an obstacle that we saw Isaac fall on in the finals last year. And Drew just got through it after two stages, in stage three, after doing the crazy cliff or the ultimate cliffhanger. And he got through it like it was nothing.
Yeah.
And it was a much more difficult version. So it's like, this is just insane.
Yeah. The only merciful thing about these two obstacles being in a row is that even though there are two incredibly difficult obstacles, they test really different things. So the body prop is not involving grip strength. It's like mostly core. So at least there's a little bit of reprieve with that. But
yeah, unlike Sasuke, which went straight from the crazy ultimate cliffhanger to the next purely grip strength obstacle as well. So that was definitely some sort of relief, I suppose. Then he gets in to the hang climb, and this was where he fell in the previous season. And he seems like he's fine. His grip strength is fine. He seems like he's got plenty of energy left, plenty of strength left. But as he goes to reach with his hand, he grabs a foothold instead of a handhold. And there's not enough give to actually grab onto it. And it throws him off balance and he goes into the water. Ah, that's just such an unfortunate way to go down here.
Yeah, especially because it's the same obstacle. And like we've said, they always have that thing where they hype up like, this is where you fell last year. And then it happens again. And it was, you know, like he said, it was a matter of planning. You know, he had an idea of in his head of the route that he was going to take, and he didn't stick to it. And it cost him, and that sucks. But at the same time, you know, at least it was a mental and physical error rather than just like a random slip.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. It was his error, and he had to own it, right? Because the obstacle is there, and all you have to do is climb it, and there are no other rules. There are no like weird technical things that can make it more difficult. It's that he grabbed the wrong thing, and that's why he failed. And I have no issue with that. I think that it was still super compelling. It wasn't like he, you know, sunk too much into the dumb wedge, right? Like, this was a classic way to go out, really. Getting so close and making a small mental mistake and just falling there. And man, it was unfortunate. I was so happy to see him go so far, but I know that he wanted to go further, and I know he was capable of going further. And so I was happy to see him, you know, in good spirits. But then after we come back from the break, he looks devastated. And I, you know, you immediately know why, right? Because I'm sure he had the same immediate reaction, which was just like, oh, I fell again. Like, at least I got really far this time, like, you know, just like any other season, like I made it really far. But then it started to probably sink in, like, wow, this really could have been my year. Like, if I hadn't made that mistake, he probably could have finished that. I mean, the bar stuff, like walking the bar and then the flying bar, that is Drew's wheelhouse. That is his specialty. He's so good at those. He totally could have finished stage three. And unless they made stage four way harder, I could easily see him beating stage four as well. So this really could have been his year if not for this small little slip up. And the enormity of that, I think, just totally dawned on him and kind of crushed him in that moment. And I was really feeling for him. Like I said, at the start of this podcast, I just finished this episode and I am still emotionally wrecked right now. So this was, again, super compelling, but at the same time, super heartbreaking, but in kind of a good way, right?
Yeah, it was a really nice shot of him kind of taking a moment to himself and letting it sink in. This was still like the most impressive thing I've ever seen. Like, this was such a hard stage. And I was rooting for him so hard because this was our ride or die day one, our pick. And it was just so exciting. And yeah, I mean, disappointing, but I think it ends, well, not completely because we still have Daniel Gill, but both of these runs, I think, still end the season on a high note.
Yeah, definitely. And I think stage three is just, they do it right. Stage three has always been exciting on American Ninja Warrior. And I've never really felt like, oh man, this is totally unfair or this is unfortunate in any way. Like once they get to stage three, it's always a fun ride. So just, yeah, really happy about this. Really happy for Drew. And, you know, hopefully he's still in fighting form for next season.
Oh, I'm sure. I think this will just be extra motivation for him.
Yes. Finally, we had Daniel Gill take on the course, and he had a strange technique with the keys on the key lock hang where he only grabbed one side of them, which I thought was very strange, but he gets through it anyway. He goes for a huge dismount and makes it through. Akbar says, if you're picking locks, you better get out of there before the cops get there.
Yeah, he kept yelling at people to get out of there, like at different points of this night.
Yeah, and then telling them that they rushed.
that they got out of there too quickly. Yeah, again, this was kind of not great TV, this obstacle, because they were pointing out like, oh, he's doing this weird technique, but you like couldn't really see it that well, I felt. I don't know how well it translated. But yeah, that's how I felt about it.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, Daniel Gill doesn't even get a package here, so there really aren't that many illusions that he's going to do super well. But you know, he moves on. He gets through the floating boards fine, and then he takes on this new cliffhanger. And I had a feeling that the cliffhanger was probably going to take him out here. I know that he's trained a lot, I imagine, on plenty of cliffhangers, but I think that Drew has a lot of experience with cliffhangers, having competed on American Ninja Warrior for lots of seasons now, and having competed on Sasuke with a very similar cliffhanger. Daniel Gill does not have that same experience, and I expected it to kind of bite him here, and it does. He does make the first jump, but he fails on the transition on the back half of the cliffhanger to right before the second jump, and that's really all there is. The momentum seemed to be carrying him backwards off of the cliffhanger, so it seemed like maybe he aimed his jump just a little bit off, and that was enough to pull his grip strength right off the ledge, essentially.
Yeah, but again, his mistake, not anything that we can be mad at or that he should be mad at or disappointed in. I think that this was a really interesting final two, not final two, you know, I don't know how to say it, but last two people to take on the course. Because, you know, we have a super seasoned ninja and Drew, and we have this young up and comer, and in a season where we've been talking a lot about like the legends and the veterans versus this sort of new crowd of people. It was interesting to demonstrate that and to see them, you know, like sharing tips and tricks before they each went on. There didn't seem to be any sort of competitive spirit between them, which is what we like about this show, because they're not really competing against each other. They're competing against the course. So yeah, it was a fun pair for me to finish the season with.
Yeah, definitely. And it really does remind me of, again, Sasuke, where they do this all the time. They share tips with each other. You can see them in the crowd, you know, showcasing how to do obstacles to each other. And it's something I wish we saw more of in ANW, but it was great to see here. But yes, this was, I really liked this finish. I'm super happy for Drew. I think that he is somebody that can join David Campbell as somebody who has gone the furthest of anybody in a single tournament. David Campbell obviously did that in, I believe, American Ninja Warrior 2 and 3 when they were sent to Sasuke. And he holds that title of having gone the furthest twice. But I really think Drew can do it. I think that, again, going into next season, as long as Drew doesn't change something up or deprioritize this, I feel like he's only going to get better. He's still young enough that he's not on any sort of decline yet. So I really have high expectations for him going into next season. And I'm really excited to see him on Team Ninja Warrior as well. So just overall, really, really liking it.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure that if he wants the opportunity, USA versus the world, we'll ask him to represent them.
Yeah, I think that's basically a given at this point.
Yeah, it's just a matter of if he wants to do it or not.
We do have some questions from the listeners to get to.
Yes.
First, we have a question from Frizzle McNabb. who asks, do you have the scoop on why Isaac is not appearing on this season? We have touched on this a little bit, and I don't want to get like too into the depths of the gossip, but the general gist of what seems to be out there, if you're not aware, is that Isaac has sort of stepped back from Ninja Warrior. He feels as though he's conquered this mountain and he wants to go do other things now. And the gist of what I've gathered from what's out there is that he kind of feels above the show in some ways, and I don't want to put that in his mouth if that's not what he's saying, but it's the gist that I'm getting from what other people are saying. And I don't think that he's, from what I've heard, been very kind to some of the other athletes. And, you know, there's been some drama surrounding that. And so it's an unfortunate situation, because you want the winner of, or one of the winners of your show, to be a good representative. And Sasuke has been really lucky with that, where all of their champions have been just amazing and really great at representing the show really well. Isaac so far has not necessarily done that, especially when you compare him to Jeff, who has been so great and so gracious. This is all speculation. None of this is proven or has come from Isaac that I've you know, heard direct from the source, but that's my understanding of the speculation, at least.
Yeah. That said, though, it's worth mentioning that he hasn't totally cut ties with the show, because they still have that palm, like, train like a crazy healthy ninja thing where you can, like, enter a contest and the prize is to train with Isaac, and that's through the show. So he at least has some relationship with the show that he's maintained. But he, I don't believe, trains with the Wolf Pack or anything anymore. So he is sort of now on the outside of the show. Yep.
Next question is from Will Seaman, who asks, is it me, or is the ending of American Ninja Warrior anticlimactic? Is there a way to fix this? Doesn't seem to be as big of a problem in Japan because it isn't stretched out over a few months. I think that, Will, you nailed one of the reasons why it's somewhat anticlimactic. It's because it is stretched out for so long. I don't think there's really a way to fix that, though, fix that part of it, at least, because they obviously want like a full length season. And as far as NBC is concerned, 13 episodes is probably still like a half season. So to shorten it any further would be ludicrous, I imagine, in their eyes. But I do think, you know, this seems to be a successful show for them. Why not run it twice a year like Sasuke used to? I think that, I mean, unless it's like really big production that really costs a lot and they couldn't afford to do it or something, I would like to see it twice. You know, maybe cut some of it short, maybe cut it a little shorter if you're doing it twice a year. You know, we don't necessarily need to see qualifying and finals as separate episodes, maybe. But I mean, at that, especially if they're 2 hour episodes each, like that, it really does become a lot. I would like to see a version of the show where it's two tournaments a year, and we see the first hour be qualifying and the second hour be finals. I mean, that I would really enjoy that show, but if it's not what they're interested in, then they're probably not going to do it. So what do you think, Lita?
I mean, that is a much more creative solution. I don't really have any ideas for how to fix it. I think that I think some people maybe would like to see there be, if not a prize, some sort of something for the person who goes the furthest. Because I know when I started watching, when I first started watching, and they said, like, we've never had a winner or whatever. And I was like, what do you mean you've never had a winner? Like, it's a contest. It's a sport. How could you have never had a winner in 6 years? Before I realized that it's not just who, you know, the winner isn't the person who does the best. You have to actually win. But I mean, I don't think there's anything really you can do about that. I think some people are going to not going to feel satisfied if there's not a winner. But, you know, there has to be a lot of glory in beating it. And you can't have that if someone wins most of the time. So I don't super have an issue with it being anticlimactic, but I like your idea. More podcasting for us.
Our next question is from Alex Moran, who asks, the great question asker, Alex Moran asks, do you think making stage two to be more upper body focused makes the run of stage two and stage three impossible? What do you think?
I mean, no, I don't think it makes it impossible. I don't think it being upper body focused is what we've had an issue with in terms of the course being too hard. I think that we like those ones because you can actually train for them.
Well, I mean, I would prefer to see less upper body focused obstacles in general. I don't think it's the upper body focused difficulty that I have a problem with. It's the touchiness of obstacles that I have a problem
right.
with. But I would like to see a more balanced course to allow for, Alex asked another question about rock climbers versus parkour and how it's gone even further toward the rock climbers. And in the beginning stages, it was much more parkour focused. And honestly, the parkour, I don't know why they drifted away from that so much, because the parkour stuff is so fun to watch and it's so engaging. And I think that getting the right mix of that is really compelling. So I would obviously like to see them do some other kinds of obstacles. But as far as difficulty goes, I think Drew Dreschel showed us that, no, it's probably not impossible, because I think that he could have cleared stage three without that small mistake.
Yeah, that said, without the one weird parkour obstacle we had in Snake Run, we could have seen Jeff Britton on stage three. So,
well, it needs to be the right kind of parkour obstacle without shaking, like, unsteady little things and stuff like that. But Alex asked another question. With Drew Dreschel making it the furthest in American Ninja Warrior and Sasuke, how long until he climbs stage four and wins?
I don't know. I mean, I can't, I don't know if we can make a prediction about this. I would love to say next year, but as we've seen, everybody falls. I don't want to put anything into the energy that would curse Drew Dreschel. Is that a super Terran answer? Like,
I'm about to give a different okay. answer. I think he can win at least one stage four between Sasuke and American Ninja Warrior within the next year. I think that he's going to have two chances. He came pretty close in Sasuke. He came very close in American Ninja Warrior. And that tells me that given two more tries in the relatively same shape that he is now, I think that he can definitely do it. And I think that he will in the next year. He's got two tries. Go for it.
Okay. Bold. I believe that he can. I just don't want to make a prediction that it's going to happen in the next year. We also got one other question from, R. Giraldi. He says, when's the Sasuke podcast, Taryn?
Right.
It's all you.
If you want to see a Sasuke podcast,
listen to this one, because it's already a Sasuke podcast.
Well, feel free to tweet at Rob Sesternino that you would like to see a Sasuke podcast. And if there's more than four of you, then there still won't be a Sasuke podcast. But if there's more of than 20 of you, then maybe we'll start to see some.
Then
progress.
Maybe we can do a one-off.
Maybe.
Where it's Taryn talking to himself and I'm just kind of here.
I think the interest needs to be there. And obviously it needs to be more than just me that's interested.
Including your co-host.
Yeah, even within this podcast, there's only one person interested in doing that. But I mean, I would love to talk, especially it would be really fun to do a Ninja Warrior podcast talking about all of the past seasons in general. That sounds really unstructured and scary, but I think it would be a lot of fun. And it would also be a lot of fun to podcast about the next American Ninja Warrior or the next Sasuke tournament. But again, if the interest isn't there, then there's not a whole lot that that we can do, I think.
My promise to the listeners is that by season 9/6, depending on who you're asking, of American Ninja Warrior, I will have watched Sasuke. I'm going to do it. I'm just at college right now, and it's a lot. And I'm watching Australian Survivor, so
you're gonna love it. It's so good. Oh man,
I believe you. I really do. This is not an ideological stance that I have against Sasuke.
Looking back at the season, first of all, I've had a really, really fun time recording this podcast with you, Lita. This has been so much fun. And the season has had a lot of ups and a lot of downs. But it's still Ninja Warrior, and I still really love it. And you know, watching Stage 3, watching Drew make it this far, really reminded me of that. And I'm so glad that I get to talk about it and share this experience really with all of you. And I really hope that we can do more of this in the future. Maybe talk about some of these specials. Hopefully, get some more interviews with some of these athletes. It probably wasn't my favorite season of American Ninja Warrior, but it was definitely still a good one. And as we mentioned, the ratings are still on the rise, so we can probably expect many more seasons to come. And that really excites me.
Yeah, I mean, I won't take too long with my sentimental goodbye to this podcast, but, Robin Scott took a chance on me letting me do this because this is my first podcast. And I am just incredibly grateful to them. I don't know how I lucked into this. It seems still like a total fluke, but this has been my favorite part of every week for so long. And I got really, really lucky not only to be able to do a show that I love so much, but also to do it with a podcaster who's very experienced in Taryn and someone that I feel like not only we mesh well on air, but, you know, you've kind of become my friend in real life. So you have to accept that, Taryn. You're stuck with me. I just feel like this was a really great fit for me to get started. And I really hope I can keep doing this show and other shows with RHAP and that all of the listeners continue to support us. And just they've all been so nice. A lot of people get a lot of hate from fans, I feel like, when they first start out, but our fans have just been really supportive, and I've had nothing but a positive experience.
Yeah, it's really been really great. And I think that we've had some pretty loyal listeners who have stuck with us this whole time, and I really want to thank you guys for sticking it out with us and coming along with us on this journey. It's really meant a lot. And to those of you who have subscribed and who have left reviews, thank you so much. You have been instrumental in the continuation of this podcast. And anybody who still hasn't left a review, you can still do so. It still would help a lot. Like we said, we still do have some content headed your way. Yeah. So, speaking of reviews and you lovely people who have left them, I believe we have a couple of reviews to read this time. It's the finale podcast. We can read more than one.
Yes.
Let's hear them.
Yeah, we have so many nice ones. So this is from Laura Simon says, she says, I've been watching American Ninja Warrior because I'm in love with Taryn Armstrong, mostly his voice, since I don't actually know him. Thank you.
Is that it?
Yes. Thank you for your kind words.
See, finally, people like me for my voice.
The American Ninja Warrior version of Is Taryn Single? As we haven't actually gotten that question yet.
Thank God.
Okay, this one is from Humby1737. It's called This Podcast Can Clear Vegas. Love this or Hap Up. Taryn and Lita are the perfect combination of knowledge and fun without taking themselves seriously. Whoever said Taryn was a robot needs to listen to this. His passion comes across completely, and Lita is the perfect complement to this fun hour. 100% recommend.
That was very kind. Yes. Did you say that was Humby?
Oh, yeah. Is that friend of the podcast?
Yes, friend of the podcast, Humby.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for that.
Many an RHAP event. Love Humby.
Yes. So thank you for all of those, for everyone who's left a review and a rating. Please continue to do it. It really helps us out, even though it's about to be officially the off season as soon as we sign off. But I have a plug, Taryn, for a plug.
Does it fit into the right socket?
Oh, my God.
Are you in the right country?
What? Okay. I understand.
Different countries, different sockets, different plugs.
Okay. Anyway,
what's the plug? You're stalling here.
I don't understand
why you're not telling us what the plug is.
No, I am very lucky to have been asked to guest spot on the RuPaul's Drag Race podcast this week. So Drag Race airs on Thursday, so we'll have that podcast out next week. That's with Mike Bloom. I'm filling in for my good friend Ali Lasher, and I will be doing that with your friend and podcasting co-host Brent Wolgamott. So this should be really fun.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, hopefully we will get into some extremely contentious topics because I learned how to podcast from you. So please listen to that if you are into that sort of thing. Brent, Ali, and Mike are really, really great. So I'm so excited to be able to do this.
All right. So for the final time this season, at least for the recap podcasts, thank you so much for joining us. Seriously, all season long, it's been amazing. And we will see you next time.